Tape?
Yep.
Okay, the Conference Committee on the Women's Economic Security Act bill, which is what? What's the House file number? 2536. 2536 will come to order. Today is May 5th, 2014. And how the House Chair and I discussed operating today is what we call the old-fashioned way, in that we're just going to go through the side-by-side and we'll adopt House and Senate provisions, and some of them we have discussed some amendments, and we'll be looking at those amendments as we take them up. And then we've passed out the spreadsheet. We have an agreed-upon spreadsheet that we'll then take up, and any provisions that are outstanding then we'll probably recess and still wait to consider some of the still unresolved issues. We just started.
Yeah,
perfect timing. So, okay. So starting out then on page R1, do we just have the staff do this? I'll do a good job. Which side is the House? Which side is the Senate?
Yeah.
The House is the House language. Okay. I think we decided we're going to take the subdivision 7 on the House side. Everybody, is that correct? I have okay written down here.
Yes.
Okay, just make sure. So just take this. And the citation. Okay, so Representative Moline moves that we do lines 1.21 through 2.2. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if it's not, speak up.
Yes, Madam Chair, right. I move to adopt 1.21 to 2.2.
All right, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Okay, then we have Section 2 and Section 1, and I believe that this is the same. Oh, we want the House language? They have the what in it?
High wage, high impact.
Oh, high wage, high impact. Right. We wanted
high
to take high wage, high demand language. So that does that go through? How far does that go?
It goes through R2.
Goes to the bottom of R2. Okay. So Section 2 is the motion?
So, Madam Chair, I move Article 2, Section 2, for adoption.
Okay. Any questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. That section is adopted. Okay. Now, on workforce program outcomes in the Senate side, I think we're not taking that language. Is that correct? All right. Then Section 3, do we have to vote on language we're not going
no.
to accept? No. Okay. Section 3, my notes say it's identical, Section 3 on R3. Yeah, but I think just that first provision is identical, right? Subdivision. Yes.
We have the high wage, high demand stuff.
So that's what we have to do then. It's not quite identical. So Section 3 is... Section 3 is the House language.
So, Madam Chair, I'd move the House language of Section 3.
Okay, any questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Okay. And R4, Subdivision 2, is the grant program. Are there any differences in that language? Is it identical? Staff can kind of help me with this.
We tried to
on R4, Subdivision 2.
You just adopted that whole section.
I adopted the whole section? Okay. Then we can move on.
Section 4, it's on the bottom.
Okay. No, I think it goes farther than that. It goes through R6. And then where does it end? On R7? Okay. So do we adopt the amendment first before we adopt the section?
Yes.
Okay. So the A42 amendment. Mr. Fuller, do you want to explain this amendment?
Madam Chair, there are two sections which deal with an issue of sexual abuse. Domestic abuse, sexual assault, and stalking, and one has a definition, the other doesn't. And so we're just referencing that other definition. So that's the language on 1.5 and 1.6 inserts the same definition because it's the same same treatment. And the language on 1.4 just makes it clear we're not what subdivisions we're defining it for.
Okay. I had a note that it needed a technical fix, so here it is. So
I move the A42 amendment.
Any questions on the A42 amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Okay. Then what's the section number?
Section
4 and Section 5. Epsom Maline?
I move the House language in Section 4 and Section 5.
And that goes through.
As amended.
And that goes through R8. At the top of R9. Why is that effective date October 5th, 2014? It's in both bills. Does anybody know?
That's traditional unemployment comp.
Unemployment comp, that's a traditional date?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, on the Maline amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Can we skip the equal pay section for now? Because it's going to take a little bit more time. And Section 7, do we adopt the money language here, or do we adopt it in the spreadsheet? We still need it in the bill, right?
Adopt it in the spreadsheet.
Adopt it in the spreadsheet?
Yeah.
Okay. So.
Do you want to talk about it now?
Yes? Will we have language to do that, or we just say that orally? And should we do that when we go through the budget sheet?
I'd do it now.
Do all the money now?
Well, I mean, do that language now. Do the money whenever you want to.
Okay. Okay, so on R13, the top of R13, and I think it starts on R12.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what's the motion? To whisper. Why don't you talk in the mic?
Madam Chair and conferees, what you'll be doing on R13 is combining the appropriation rider language from both the House and the Senate. So the dollar amount and the fund will be as indicated on Ms. Roberts' spreadsheet, but the rider will combine the language of the House and Senate so that it'll be basically for high wage, high demand, non-traditional jobs grant program. You'll pick up the houses, not supplant other funds available, and also the 5% for administration that the Senate has. So you're combining the riders.
So moved as stated by Ms. Newman.
Representative Maline makes that motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Okay, on R13, we're going with the House language. Does anyone want to comment on taking on the House language here with giving the grants to Women's Venture and the Women's Business Center of Northeastern Minnesota? Plus, we have an amendment. So let's, if anyone is thinking about it, if they want to comment, we have an amendment to pass. Ms. Newman, do you want to explain the amendment?
Certainly. Madam Chair and members, the effect of the amendment is to make the grant program to Women Ventures and the Women's Business Center in Northeast Minnesota to add outreach requirements to what they have to do, and to require that they develop, compile, and disseminate resources, information, and technical assistance on best practices and model programs that can be replicated on a statewide basis. So the attempt is to expand this beyond northern Minnesota and the metro area.
Okay, is there any discussion on the A43 amendment?
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
I think we had a very good discussion about the Women's Business Center of Northeastern Minnesota, Northeast Entrepreneurial Fund. It just seems like we fixed it a little bit, but we really didn't give enough comfort to making sure that it does reach statewide. Do they have the resources to be able to do that? I mean, are they prepped to do that?
I know Ms. Baptiste is here. Do you want to talk about that at all? And while she's coming up, just my thoughts was it's only $500,000 and it's two groups, so you can't really get an effective model if you spread the money too thin. So that's why we said we do want it to be an effective model.
So Madam Chair, this is more of a pilot program? Is that what you're thinking?
Program, right. Two pilots. Ms. Baptiste.
Thank you, Madam Chairs and members of the committee. My name is Barbara Baptiste. I'm director of the Legislative Office on the Economic Status of Women. And I also used to work for Women Ventures, so I've been involved in this bill. And Madam Chair, what you said is really the crucial point, that the concept was that this would be a pilot project and that it's 2 years, so you have $500,000 divided over 2 years, and it was to set up a model that could then be replicated throughout the state. And I know that is Women Ventures' design. They were going to work through small business centers, so hopefully it could easily be replicated. Also, I did check. Women Venture actually, in the last 2 years, they did serve 19 counties. Vast majority, however, in the Twin Cities metro area, and they were not very much in southern Minnesota, not in your counties. But their plan is that this could be replicated throughout the state. And I know when Women Venture put together their initial thought, their budget alone was $500,000 to do what they thought needed to be done to really have a change in the system. So $500,000, if you start dividing it up among a lot, they don't think will change the system.
Okay, on the A43 amendment, is there any more discussion? Representative Moline offers the amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. I was just wondering under this section if we shouldn't pick up the Senate language that says it's available until expended. Because, look, you think they are? Grants are available until expended?
That's what you agreed to.
Okay. So they don't have to turn the money back if they don't, because she said they wanted it for a 2-year program. Okay, so. Staff experts have said we don't need to add that language.
No, you do.
We should add it. Okay. All right. Then where should we put it? Why don't we put it on 11.26? This is a one-time appropriation and is available until expended. Does that sound good?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then Representative Moline moves that language. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Did you adopt Section 8 as amended?
We haven't.
So, Madam Chair, I would move for adoption of House Section 8 as amended.
And that takes us to the entire section. Okay. I don't know if we talked about the difference in language between the House and the Senate on this. Is it still using that high-wage, high-demand language, or...?
Madam Chair.
Ms. Newman.
The two provisions were very similar in their intent. I think the differences, I think, were in the, if you look on page R14, lines 12, 10, and 12, 11 of the House, the poverty definitions were geared to the poverty level for a family size of four. And I believe that was the agreement.
And it's 200%
Correct.
Of federal poverty. Okay. Okay. Okay, Representative Moline moves House Section 8 as amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. Motion prevails. So now we're on Section 9. Do we need to meld the language again?
Yes.
And keep that language that says it's available until expended. That's in the Senate language. And then the Senate also has the... Now, this Senate language has the $24,000. Do you have an amendment for the $100,000?
Just drop
it. It's just on the spreadsheet. So we should just drop this language?
No. We need to adopt this, and it's at $100,000.
It's at $100,000. Okay. Okay, so Representative Moline moves to meld the language on Section 9. 12.22 to 12.29 with the Senate language on 12.23 to 12.27. Let's just do that. That would include the is available until expended language. Are there any questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. Motion prevails. Then on the bottom of R14, because later on in the bill we're changing some of the enforcement mechanisms, so we've managed to come up with more money for Dolly. So this, we have to strike $24,000 and insert $100,000. Let's just incorporate that into the Senate language. So Representative Moline moves line 11.28 to 11.30 with the oral amendment to $100,000. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. Motion prevails. Okay. Now, on Section 10, I think we have an amendment. The House does the amendments, they use the House language. At least it's identical. At least I'm not keeping track. You'd be in trouble. These House provisions.
Yeah.
At time Mark Gavina used to keep track. Okay. Somebody on the staff want to talk about what we're doing with this amendment? Mr. Shepherd?
Madam Chair and members. This amendment is based on some of the testimony that the conferees heard at your last meeting. You may recall that the House structure had some parts of this report that were mandatory and some parts that were permissive and available to be done if there was enough money to do them. And Mr. Elliott had testified at the last meeting. He requested that the language which you see on line 1.23 and 1.24 of this A54 amendment, barriers to savings, be included in the mandatory part, so that has been done. And then he had suggested that on page 2, the language that now appears on page 2, line 30, the options discouraging employers from dropping existing plans be in the permissive part subject to available appropriations. So that language has been moved. And then finally, there was a compromise reflected on Ms. Roberts' spreadsheet on the appropriation that is on line 3.4. I believe the two houses had a difference between $300,000 and $750,000, and this amendment proposes
$400,000. Okay. Any questions on the amendment?
Still reading it.
Did you move the amendment? Oh, I thought.
No, I said I'm still reading it.
You're still reading it. Mayor Rosa needs, never saw any of these issues in any of her committees.
Madam Chair.
It's Krisha, right? Representative Krisha. Got it right.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Shepherd, just quickly, so we've moved from 350 to 400,000. Those two small provisions we added Do we think those are the cost of that $50,000 increase on the House side? Did I miss something?
$400,000, huh?
Or $100,000. I'm sorry. We went from $300,000 to $400,000. I was just looking for the basis of how we got to the number.
I, Representative Kreshaw, I know that $300,000 the House had sort of pulled out of thin air.
Okay.
And so, you know, perhaps our original appropriation didn't match up to what the needs were with that study anyway. So I'm not sure that adding just those two more provisions would cost $100,000. I think that we were pretty low on the number that we set from the get-go because we kind of just came up with that. So that might be why you have that discrepancy.
I think people basically talk to one vendor,
yep,
and MNB. It's always an estimate, which is why having all these optional items is great, is a good idea, because then more of these could be included if possible. Did you have more?
No, I just want to follow up. Okay, so that helps a lot, because I was worried that it was an arbitrary number, and so now we're actually honing in. This seems to be a better number, so very good. Thank you.
This is pretty much the language that was approved by the Commerce Committee.
Okay.
Representative Maleen moves the A54 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
Okay, I have a couple of amendments upstairs.
You have some amendments upstairs?
Yeah, that I need to put on the bill.
Okay. I'm going to carry on about
you. Yes. Keeping things for me? We're skipping her section anyway. Okay, let's move on to R18, Article 3. This is just where we're taking the Senate language, the biological.
Is that 3-2 is fine.
That's the second one.
What's 3-2? I might confuse. I mean the first section.
They're identical.
Section 3. Oh, I didn't see the word section 3. They're identical. So section, in other words, down to 1523 on the House side and 1333 on the Senate side, they're identical. 15.16. Oh, I see what you're saying. Section 1. Okay. The numbers are so small. It's hard to see. So why are we taking the House side? Okay. Okay. All right. Representative Maleen moves the House language in Section 1 on page R18. It's identical. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion passed. It's a House. Okay, then in Section 2, there was a difference. On 15.24, the House said natural, and on 14.1, the Senate said biological. And so we're going with the Senate language. Representative Maleen moves the Senate language in Section 4, and I think the rest of it is identical. Just that one word difference. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Section on page R19, Section 3 on the House side and Section 5 on the Senate side. I believe this language is, oh no, it's not identical. Down to, it has the in-laws. So do we take the whole section House side then?
Yes.
Yeah.
Section 3.
Okay, Section 3 on the House side, they added mother-in-law and father-in-law. So Representative Maleen moves the House language in Section 3. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Okay. Is pregnancy accommodation, is that one we're still working on? Or did we agree?
We amendment.
This is just the penalties, we're not.
No penalties on there.
Okay, we'll pass out the amendment A52. Senate language?
Yes.
All right. Well, I agree to advice.
Yes, I thought.
This is just a little bit broader than what I thought we'd agreed to. So, Representative Moline or the staff, maybe talk a little bit about this issue. So, I thought we agreed to advice for licensed care provider instead of documentation of medical necessity. And so, what is this? What is the rest of it mean, or why did you add the rest of it?
I thought, what does the rest of it do? I mean, from my understanding, we were, we had consulted or looked at other states, and the language that they used was that the requirement was the advice as opposed to written documentation.
So here it says, for employees, medical and physical conditions related to pregnancy or childbirth, and you have conditions related to pregnancy, childbirth. What's a related medical condition?
I think that was language that came from the House provision. We had related health conditions, and our interpretation was that it included things like postpartum depression or things that came up after childbirth relating to a cesarean section or some unforeseen medical conditions. And again, that language came from other states.
Okay. And what is the 33, employer may not claim, what does that mean? Delete line 33. Okay. May not claim undue hardship for the following accommodations. Okay, I get it. Okay, does anybody else have any questions? I just wanted to go a little bit more slowly on this. Yeah. Mr. Fuller.
Madam Chair, the question would be, is the intent of the House language to provide requiring accommodation if it's not a medical condition? Because, you know, it's not clear. Because on the Senate side, on 15.28, it says employees' medical or physical condition related to pregnancy or childbirth. And the House side, it says on 17.17, for conditions related to pregnancy, childbirth, or related health conditions. So I guess the question is that intentional not to put medical before condition on line 17.17? If so, sort of what does that encompass then?
Madam Chair, Mr. Fuller, I think that goes back to the example that we've used as far as making sure that something like postpartum depression would be included. Whereas in the Senate language, I don't think it's clear that something like that would be. So I would say it was intentional to leave that out.
So it could be a condition to be in diapers. So you go buy diapers. So isn't postpartum depression a medical condition? Mm-hmm. So
buying diapers is not a medical condition.
I know, but they say conditions related to pregnancy. So it's not a medical condition related to pregnancy. It's condition. Mm-hmm. And you know, if it's true that those aren't medical conditions, what's the limits?
So it would be enough to say accommodations for employee for medical conditions related to pregnancy and childbirth.
Yeah, I think their position
postpartum is related to childbirth.
Yeah. It's just bigger.
It's bigger.
Right, we can do that as a technical grant. What are accommodations that need to be made for?
Representative Kreshaw.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I know we're talking about the medical conditions part. I'm wondering if I could raise another issue. Thinking from the employee's point of view, if we don't have some type of documentation, what protects them down the road if they have some type of claim? In other words, if I've given some documentation and that, and I didn't get the accommodation, it seems to me it becomes a he said, she said, and I don't know that that's a good position for the employee. I would almost think that we'd want to have something in their hands so that then when they make this claim, they can say, here's the documentation, here's what I've asked for, rather than, oh.
I'll say something when you can. I think how it's going to work in the real world, if the employer or the employee have a concern, mm-hmm. is the employee will bring in a note from their doctor, or the employer will say, could you just have your doctor send me a note? And the employee will call the doctor and say, would you fax over a note from my employer? The thing that we didn't want to have, which I agree with the House, is if you have a medical necessity, the doctor might say, it's not really a medical necessity, but it's a good idea for you not to lift 40 pounds. But it's not, I can't call it a medical necessity. So that's why I agreed to change it to upon recommendation or advice of her licensed healthcare provider. What I'm just not sure is about the beginning of the sentence, the first part of the sentence. Mr. Fuller, and then I'll call on you. Did I say it?
Madam Chair, Representative Kreshaw, remember that this is a reasonable accommodation. So, and it's an interactive process. So in some instances, it would be reasonable. Maybe the employer could choose not to request something. It's obvious. So I think even with taking the word written out of there, that the other concepts would allow an employer to request one, although saying, and there may be some instances where you don't want it. So if that's the tension, what's the best way to make sure you can get corroboration without requiring over-corroboration, you know? And so that's what we were wrestling with. And I think that's what your concern is. So.
Yeah, Representative Kreshaw.
And thank you. And Mr. Fuller, so I'm looking at, and I realize this is broad and vast, but what would be the best scenario to protect the employee? Is it to have the documentation or as any, I'm just, that's my question that I'm trying to wrestle with myself.
Oh, Madam Chair.
Mr. Fuller.
Representative Kreshaw. Protecting the employee is, I don't think is an appropriate, is the primary concern. What's the primary concern is making sure that the employee gets a reasonable accommodation. And in some instances, you might need a note from the doctor to satisfy the employer that it's reasonable. And in other instances, you may not. It's obvious. And that was the House concern originally, that was
right.
It was putting too heavy a burden on because,
okay.
You know, so it's not protecting the employee. It's making sure that there's a reasonable accommodation, which in some cases, I suppose, is an accommodation could be unreasonable. And we want to be able to. You want that determination to be able to be made in a factual way.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there anybody that could testify on this section? Because I agree with the representative as far as questioning, the security for the employee with the documentation. And I just like to know how it's going to work in the real world.
Representative Moline.
Senator Pattis, I think... maybe if we just set aside the pregnancy accommodations language for now and then revisit it to figure out the amendment and how we're going to move forward.
So we'll skip the transfer stuff then. Interaction with other laws? No. Is something... This was the diminished thing?
Right.
Does this have to do with the pregnancy or with everything?
No, with that section.
What?
Just with that section.
With the pregnancy section.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we're setting that aside for now. Okay. Okay, we're going to move on R21 to...
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I was...
Yeah,
so are we setting aside the amendment for now?
We're setting aside the amendment and the whole section on pregnancy accommodation.
Okay, and if I could... Madam Chair, just for consideration, could we, and I know we'll probably come back to this, could we offer, or I would just offer some type of language that would allow for documentation if requested. Just, and you don't have to, I just want to, we don't have to do it now, but I just wanted to enter that into the discussion that maybe the employer or the employee could, you know, something along the lines of allowing for documentation to come along if needed as an option.
It certainly is allowed. There's nothing prohibiting it.
Okay.
Representative Sieben? Senator Sieben?
And I know we're going to come back to it, but I just point out to the committee members that the Senate language did specify, too, that, and we had this discussion in one of the committees, that a pregnant woman should not have to bring in a note for the accommodations that are outlined on 15.34 and 3.5. So, for example, pregnancy, you shouldn't have to bring in a note from a medical provider that you need more frequent restroom breaks, food or water breaks, that you need to sit, or limits on lifting over 20 pounds.
That's my example.
And I think that that's, we were trying to sort of strike this balance in the Senate between, in some cases, written documentation may be reasonable to provide, but for some of the more, the things that, how do we say it, but like we know this impacts pretty much all pregnant women, that there shouldn't be documentation required for those things. So just something to consider as we look at it.
Before we move out this section, does anyone have any other questions or concerns? Like I think the transfer language in the House, that was included in the Senate language, I thought.
John?
No, we were, Madam Chair.
Yeah, it says transfer. Transfer any employee.
Right. In the House language, we had applied undue hardship only to the request
I see.
Of a transfer. The Senate had applied it to
everything.
Everything other than the three pieces that were outlined that Senator Sieben just spoke to.
Okay. And then the other thing we did discuss in Subdivision 3, there was some confusion. Remember, we had the discussion with the Department of Human Rights about the word effect, that maybe we change that to diminish. That was just discussed. The other thing in this section that came up is on, there was some concern expressed on the Senate language on accept an accommodation. On the employee, shall not require an employee to take a leave or accept an accommodation. Just on the accept an accommodation language. Okay, then, so we're setting that aside. So now we have on R21, Section 5 in the House side, Section 7 in the Senate side, which is the same until what, when? That whole section? Okay, then Representative Moline moves Section 5, the House language. It's the same. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Okay. Nursing mothers. We're taking the Senate language, right? Mm-hmm. And we can take it down to where? Oh, this is the one where we have the discussion about penalties.
15.12.
Yep, don't you have an amendment?
No,
I have an amendment.
On the Senate side.
13.12, yeah, enforcement. The House has an amendment. Is this on everything now, Anita? On all of them?
Yeah, this covers all.
It covers all. So this is the whole plan. And we still have the, we should maybe talk about the. Okay, for members of the audience, the A51 amendment puts some remedies into the DALI statutes because we're moving all of these provisions on pregnancy and nursing and wage disclosure into the Department of Labor and Industry, and giving them some more money for enforcement. So this means they're, you know, this is the Senate position to have it more appropriately in DALI instead of in human rights. But DALI didn't have, in 181, there were very limited remedies. So this would give them employees access to more remedies. And does someone want to talk about some of these? Any more about this amendment? Anybody in the staff? Want to correct anything I said or add to anything I said? Anita?
Madam Chair and members of the conference committee, what this amendment would do would move, it moves the provisions of this bill relating to wage disclosure. This includes pregnancy accommodation, pregnancy and parenting leave.
Does it include nursing?
Nursing mothers.
Mm-hmm.
And my mind is a little blank.
Wage disclosure.
I think I said that. Mm-hmm. It moves it into Section 177 in the Department of Labor and Industry, the compliance order process, so that it gives the Commissioner of Labor and Industry enforcement authority. By doing so, the commissioner can issue a compliance order. He or she can impose some fines upon the issuance of an order and the order not being complied with. And then it also moves these provisions into the Department of Labor and Industry investigation section. And for the provision regarding nursing mothers, it requires the commissioner to contact the employer within 2 business days to investigate a complaint. And then it also provides the individual remedies to a plaintiff for violations of these different provisions. And on the wage disclosure, it only covers the paragraph A and D that was in the Senate's in their wage disclosure provision. Their penalty only covered paragraph A and D, and this would only cover paragraph A and D as well.
So it doesn't cover whether they put it in their employee's handbook or not?
Correct.
Right. Okay. Any discussion on the A51?
And the use of sick leave is the provision that I couldn't remember. That's
oh, okay. Okay, all those in favor of the A50, excuse me, Representative Malone moves the A51 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. Motion prevails. We adopted that. Now we have to adopt the Section 2 of the Senate side. Subdivision and Subdivision 1.
Just Section 2, Subdivision 1. We were going to remove Subdivision 2 because we adopted the new remedies.
Right.
So I would move Section Senate language Section 2, Subdivision 1.
All those in favor say aye.
As amended.
As amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. Motion prevails. Okay. The next section is on the House side, which is the family caregiver as a protected class. Representative Moline, did you want to talk about that anymore? Or did you want to just set it aside?
Just set it aside.
Put that aside. Okay, then I think we're on R25, Section 8 on the House side, and Section 1 on the Senate side. I think we're taking the Senate language, because it's 181. All right, any discussion on the wage disclosure protection provisions? Is it in the amendment?
Is it in the
in 177?
No, the amendment to 181.
I mean, is it in the A51 amendment? Individual remedies. Right?
It is.
Okay.
So keep it there. I don't think so.
We don't need it.
Yes.
We don't need on page R26, 1225.
Your expungement language.
Oh, so should we keep it?
Yes.
It's probably a good idea to keep it.
Would it be in conflict if we kept all of that language?
No, it would just be on top of it.
Expungement.
Okay, the Reverend Moline moves on R25 and R26, the Senate provision on wage disclosure, section 1. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. Motion prevails. Okay, I think Reverend Moran should be back for this if we want to try to understand more the pay equity section. So we don't need to take every chunk out.
No, it doesn't go in unless you adopt it.
I mean, sometimes I've seen that done in public committees, so they take stuff out.
Madam Chair.
Representative Kreisha.
While we're waiting, I'm just curious, do we know where we're at with the scholarships? Are we negotiating in ours, or is that going as part of the other?
It's in the other budget bill.
So we won't be taking that up?
We're not doing it.
Okay, thank you.
No, we clarified that. Oh, I know what we can do while we wait for Representative Moran, is we can have Ms. Roberts go through the spreadsheet. Ms. Roberts.
Madam Chair and members, on the spreadsheet, you want to look at the third set of columns about in the middle of the page that's labeled conference agreement. The first items are under the Department of Human Rights, and the agreement is $674,000 from the general fund and $37,000 from the special revenue fund. This is for implementation of the certificates of pay equity. And then the base funding for this is $426,000 each year, continuing in fiscal year 16 and beyond, and that's from the general fund. And the special revenue fund will also continue into the base. The next item is the retirement plan report, which was already discussed by Mr. Shepherd, and the agreed upon funding is $400,000 one time, available until expended. Under the Department of Employment and Economic Development, the House and Senate had some identical funding recommendations, but just a different source of funding, and the conference agreement is to take the Senate approach, which is $500,000 from the general fund for the entrepreneur grants, but using $500,000 from the Workforce Development Fund for the women's non-traditional jobs grants. Under the Department of Labor and Industry, again, here the conference agreement was to take the Senate approach of using $250,000 from the Workforce Development Fund for the women's apprenticeships grants. And you'll also see the $100,000 that was discussed earlier for the increased compliance and enforcement. And I should note that all of those grant funds, again, are one-time and available until expended. So the total funding in the conference agreement for all funds for the biennium is $2,461,000. That includes $1.674 million from the general fund, and then $750,000 from the Workforce Development Fund, and again the $37,000 per year from the special revenue account.
Okay, I think we did good. Senator Rosen.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Is your intent to wrap up the bill tonight, or are we going to discuss more on some of the issues that we laid behind?
We're probably going to recess because we still have some unresolved issues that need to be discussed.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I think if we could wrap it up tonight, it might be a good idea.
I have a bill up tonight.
But you have a bill up tonight? You have a conference committee or a bill on the floor? Kate is the one who said that to you. Okay, we're probably going to have a little bit more discussion and then adjourn.
Okay.
And then we'll come back tomorrow.
Okay.
With Representative Moline. Any questions on the spreadsheet? Okay, then Representative Moline moves that we adopt the spreadsheet. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. Motion prevails. We're just going to take a short recess, and while we wait for Representative Moran, who's on her way down. Okay, the conference committee will come back to order, and we have an agreement on the remaining provisions. And so let's start maybe with Ms. Newman on the pregnancy section.
Chair and members, I have an amendment.
Can you remind us what page this is?
It's on R20.
Okay, so once again, we're taking the Senate language. That's great. And Ms. Newman, do you want to just explain the, is that an A14 amendment?
It's the RA14279 amendment, and it would take the Senate language, but it would modify it to say that an employer has to provide reasonable accommodation to an employee for health conditions related to pregnancy or childbirth if she so requests with the advice of her licensed health care providers. And then it would strike lines on page 15, line 32, it would strike everything after the period, strike line 33, and insert an employer may not claim undue hardship for the following accommodations. R20.
And Senator Sieben, are you comfortable with this language?
So just to clarify for council then, a pregnant employee will not have to provide documentation for any of the following accommodations that are outlined there then? Is that correct?
Madam Chair, it just says that with the advice of her licensed health care provider. So the written accommodation language or written documentation language on line 1529 of the Senate proposal is no longer there.
In either section or the two sections.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Fuller.
I think Senator Sieben's concern is that we made a specific exemption for the medical documentation. Now we've reduced it to, we've changed it to what's in the amendment. And that's not, instead of deleting the language on line 32, maybe it's better to say they don't require the advice of a doctor since that's not what we're a medical provider. Because otherwise, we don't have that safe harbor necessarily. That was reflected in the Senate bill for those three accommodations, perhaps, unless
right.
I'm too
tired. Right, so just to clarify, the way I understood the Senate language was that there would be an employee could provide written accommodations or a written documentation of a health concern by a licensed health care provider. But would not need that written accommodation, or I'm sorry, written documentation for the things outlined in the on lines 15.34 to 15.35. And so I'm just trying to clarify.
It's confusing. Ms. Newman, could you read it with the engrossing the amendment?
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair and members, The subdivision one would read, an employer must provide reasonable accommodations to an employee for health conditions related to pregnancy or childbirth if she so requests with the advice of her licensed health care provider, unless the employer demonstrates that the accommodation would impose an undue hardship on the operation of the employer's business. An employer may not claim undue hardship for the following accommodations, more frequent restroom, food, and water breaks, and then the language on 1535 to 16.8 would remain the way it is.
So, Ms. Newman, if I may, just to clarify then, for those things on 15.34 to 15.35, written documentation would not be required.
Madam Chair and Senator Stephen, that's correct.
You know, I just noticed that you dropped the language "or certified doula." That is in line 15.30.
I think, Madam Chair, that is okay because it says "with the advice of her licensed healthcare provider."
And is the certified doula a licensed healthcare provider?
It's not.
Right.
We discovered that in the committee.
Right. So we need to add. License. I think we should add that back in.
So we'll just add "or certified doula." Mm-hmm. After
provider.
Okay, so why don't we just incorporate that into the amendment? So is everyone clear what the amendment is?
Well,
Mr. Fuller.
The law or the proposal used to require or did not require the documentation of medical necessity for these three safe harbor. We removed that because we no longer require medical necessity, but we require the advice. So the question remains, does the employee need medical advice for those former three safe harbors? Because that's not clear. And so if we kept the same structure as we had before, which was saying you need this for that and you don't need this for this, we would put the same thing in there, which you don't need the medical advice of a...
So a pregnant employee shall not be required to provide medical advice.
To rely on medical advice.
Nor may an employer claim undue hardship for the following accommodations.
That would parallel the old construct. So, Madam Chair,
well, you shouldn't say medical. You should probably say to provide, I don't know, medical advice. Does that sound, does that work? Or advice by a healthcare provider or certified doula? Do you have to repeat all of that?
No, I think it should be shall not require written documentation.
We don't require written documentation at all.
It would be the advice. If you were wanting to make sure you didn't have to have any medical intervention or recommendation, you would negative the recommendation, advice, whatever it is.
So a pregnant employee shall not be required to assert
rely on
mm-hmm. medical advice.
I mean, do you want us just to work on that?
Maybe you should work on it.
If you wanted to make it parallel, you can instruct us, and that's what we'll do.
Well, I think we can just easily, so we'll just adopt the or certified doula after healthcare provider. And then instead of...
Drop line 1.7 of the amendment.
Yep, drop line 1.7 of the amendment. And instead, 15.32 would read, a pregnant employee need not assert. Ms. Newman, what language would you?
Madam Chair and Representative Moline, the employee may be asked to have something with the advice of her licensed healthcare provider. So I don't know that you assert advice. A pregnant employee shall not be required to have the advice of her licensed healthcare provider
or a certified doula.
And an employer may not claim undue hardship for the following. That's a very cumbersome, but
it's very cumbersome, right? Representative Cresha.
I know we're getting in the weeds in this, and I can't help to think about if one of my daughters were to be in a situation where she were to be pregnant and not want to tell me, and under this, and not to seek, because as Mr. Fuller said, you don't need the advice or the intervention really of a medical professional. So she could, one of my daughters, under this scenario, without telling me, could actually go into work and say, you know what, I want an accommodation, never having to really prove that she's working with a medical official. And that just concerns me a bit. Because don't we want them, I mean, under this scenario, you don't actually have to have, you just have to have the advice. You don't actually have to have a medical professional behind you, according to what Mr. Fuller said, right?
No.
Because there's no documentation? And maybe I'm reading it wrong.
Madam Chair, just to clarify what my intent was, and the Senate language coming into the conference committee outlined, beginning on lines 15.33, that an employer couldn't say that an undue hardship was more frequent restroom breaks, accommodations for seating or for lifting over 20 pounds. So the rationale and the thinking that we had in the committees was that you shouldn't require a pregnant woman to provide a note from her medical provider or doula that she needs to use the bathroom more, or that she needs to sit or have a limit on lifting items over 20 pounds. So all I want to make sure on this language, and I think we're pretty close or just a little tied up, is that there's no understanding that those accommodations need any sort of medical advice from a healthcare professional.
Okay. I understand. I'm sorry.
I think we should set it aside because I think it's hard for us to figure it out as a group, and maybe let Ms. Newman and Mr. Fuller kind of work on it, and unless you have the next amendment, or are you ready?
Well, I think Ms. Newman just drafted the language that would work. So
good.
She could just read it.
All right, let's try again. Ms. Newman.
Madam Chair and members, so line 1.6, before the comma, you would add, or certified doula. You'd strike 1.7 from the amendment. Line 1.8 would read, page 15, delete line 33, and insert, shall not be required to provide the advice of a licensed health care provider or certified doula, nor an employer may not claim, and then it would read undue hardship for the following accommodations, more frequent restroom.
Okay. That sounds fine. Does anybody have any questions about that? Sounds okay. All right. All those in favor of the amendment as read by Ms. Newman, say aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Conference committees are a little looser than committees. Okay, what's our next issue? Do we have another issue?
Adopt the pregnancy accommodation.
Oh, adopt the whole section. Okay, and that is adopting the section 6 of the Senate bill as amended by the A14-279 amendment. Representative Moline moves that. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Members, I'd offer the A14-280 amendment beginning on R23. And members, this we had provided to add the familial status and status as a family caregiver into the Minnesota Human Rights Act for the purpose of employment discrimination protections.
And we had a strong position in the House. That language passed. Well, our overall bill passed 106 to 24. This status as a family caregiver was very important to the AARP and other advocacy groups. But through negotiations with the Senate, we came to an agreement that we would drop the status as a family caregiver protections in the Minnesota Human Rights Act, but keep familial status in exchange for an agreement we came on to on the pay equity provisions, which we will be getting to shortly. So, members, I would move this amendment, which again still provides the employment discrimination protections for familial status, but removes the status as a family caregiver as a new protected class in the Minnesota Human Rights Act.
So Representative Moline moves the A14-280 amendment, and I just want to say that I really, really, really appreciate your concession on this because I know how important it was to you and to a lot of the advocates in the room. It wasn't in the Senate bill, but I still know that it was a big concession on your part, and I appreciate it.
Well, and I just want to add familial status just protects basically pregnant women and mothers or fathers who have kids under the age of 18 who live in their household. So, you know, by removing status as a family caregiver, we're leaving out people who care for their elderly parents. We're leaving out people who care for their adult children with disabilities. We're leaving out people who care for their spouse. So there's really a lot of people being left behind by removing the status as a family caregiver and limiting it only to familial status, which is defined elsewhere in the Minnesota Human Rights Act. So, you know, I do. It was an important position for the House to have, but, you know, in light of our agreements on the equal pay provisions of the bill, this was the decision that we made as House conferees. So I'd ask members adopt the A14-280 amendment.
Is there any discussion? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. We have one more amendment. Oh, we have to adopt that section. Thank you. Right. No? Oh, yes, we do. Right.
What page is it on again?
R22.
R22.
Okay, the House moves on.
Not this, though. Well, where do we start? Section 3 at the bottom of R22. Section 3. Well, I'd move House Sections 3, 4, 5,
6,
and 6 as amended.
Are there any questions? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Madam Chair.
Are adopted. Senator Rosen.
Madam Chair, on the 280 amendment that we just adopted with mm-hmm. the status of family caregiver, is that, why aren't we not taking out the familial status and just the status of a family caregiver? Can we have an explanation on that? I know we just adopted that, but mm-hmm. it seems like we only got half of the deal here.
Well, yeah, Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, most of the opposition we heard was in regards to the status as a family caregiver. The familial status, as I stated, protects only pregnant women and parents who have children under the age of 18 who live with them. Status as a family caregiver protected all those other people that I named. So if you were caring for your elderly parents, if you were caring for a spouse, if you were caring for a sibling, if you were caring for an adult child with disabilities, those classes aren't being protected under familial status. It's just that very narrow definition. Familial status is actually already contained in the Minnesota Human Rights Act, but only under the housing provisions. So we're adding it as a protected class for employment discrimination purposes.
So, Madam Chair, so we still got the familial status. I mean, we agreed to that, so we really haven't given up anything. The House didn't really give up anything. They only gave up half of what the deal was.
Well, Senator Rosen, I was not. We did not have this in our bill, and so according to people who saw the House debate and heard House testimony, the objection was to status as a family caregiver, and the issue with familial status wasn't brought up.
Madam Chair, I thought it was the entire section two. Is there anybody that can we bring this back up and get some testimony on this?
Madam Chair,
we've already adopted it.
Okay. Yeah,
Representative Malia.
Madam Chair and Senator Rosen, I don't want to get into what the House gave up and what the Senate gave up, but we agreed to put the nursing accommodations enforcement into DALI instead of the Minnesota Human Rights Act, which is where we started. We agreed to take the Senate's position on remedies for wage disclosure. We agreed to take the Senate's position on pregnancy accommodations. So there were a number of concessions we made that we had preferred, I think, the House decision, especially on nursing accommodations, putting it in the Minnesota Human Rights Act. So we had already agreed to all those concessions and took up the Senate provisions in regard to that. So, I mean, I think there was a number of factors at play in these discussions. This was one of them, as well as the other enforcement provisions that the House agreed to take the Senate position on.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Milan, I know there that the House gave up quite a bit here, but I understood that these are the two most contentious issues is the familial status and the pay equity. I'm having a hard time speaking here. And I just thought we were not even going to take up at all Section 2, that was not even going to be. So we basically adopted the House language, except minus the family caregiver. We still...
Well, Senator Rosen, it's been my understanding from the stakeholders that it was family caregiver. And they testified in the conference committee last week that it was family caregiver that they didn't want. So no one has ever spoken to me about the provision on familial status, which is already in the human rights law in housing.
And, Madam Chair, if I could, Senator Rosen.
I'm not aware that that's even controversial.
I have the letter from the Minnesota Chamber, the Metro Cities, League of Minnesota Cities, Minnesota School Boards, Minnesota Employment Law Council, and the Minnesota Business Partnership. They only cite as a concern family caregiver. They do not cite familial status as being a concern. I can say that I carried this provision personally through the House, and there was a lot of testimony against family caregiver, and I don't recall any testimony against familial status.
Okay, let's do the next. We have another amendment now on the equal pay provisions. Oh, to obtain?
Yeah.
Should we go back and do that?
Yeah.
Do we have to reconsider the amendment?
Yeah.
We changed, the council is recommending that we change a word in the RA 14279 amendment on pregnancy. So let's just reconsider the vote whereby that amendment was adopted. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Ms. Newman.
Madam Chair, on the amendment to page 15 on the deletion of line 33 in the language, it's been suggested that the line 33 language read, be required to obtain the advice of a licensed health care provider or certified doula, and then an employer may not claim. So the operative word is to obtain on page 15, which would now be the new line 33.
Of that change in the amendment, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion passes. All right, we have the A10 amendment.
And is Mr. Shepherd, are you going to explain it?
Certainly, Madam Chair. So,
do you have the information that says whether it's a Senate or House provision, too?
Yes, Madam Chair. Okay. I'll try to identify that as I go through this. This was an attempt to combine some Senate and House provisions. So in the amendment is the SCH 2536A10 amendment, and on the first decision on lines 1.6 and 1.7, the Metropolitan Council and Metropolitan Agency was included. That was a Senate position. It wasn't in the House bill. On page 1, line 8, a business that has 40 or more employees in the state was the Senate position. The House had 50 or more employees. Paragraph B is reorganized a little bit to put all the exemptions into one paragraph. The first sentence saying that this section does not apply to a business with respect to a specific contract if the Commissioner of Administrations determines it would cause an undue hardship to the contracting entity was a new language based on some conversations among some of the conferees. The sentence that says this section does not apply to a contract to provide goods and services under specified chapters of Minnesota statutes is a concept that was in both bills, but it's been rearranged to make it clear that the section doesn't apply to a contract instead of excluding an entire business. And on page 1, line 16, the reference to section 268A is added from both bills based on some input that was provided to the conference committee on that. On line 1.18 to 1.19, the exclusion for State Board of Investment contracts for the MSRS deferred comp plan is in, and that was a Senate position. Madam Chair, the first part of subdivision 2, the application for an equal pay certificate by paying the fee, the fee was in both bills. This language at the bottom of page 1, 1.30 to 1.35, about average compensation for female employees relative to male employees is from the House bill. The language on the top of page 2, clause 3, lines 2.1 and 2.2 is from the House bill. And I believe that the rest of the language, and Mr. Fuller or someone can correct me if I'm wrong on this, clauses 4 or 5, I think, was in, the concept was in both of the bills. And paragraph B is from the Senate bill. I believe paragraph C is from the Senate bill as well. The notion of subdivision 3 requiring the commissioner to issue an equal pay certificate within 15 days is from Senate subdivision 3. The revocation of the certificate is from Senate subdivision 4. Subdivision 5, the revocation of a contract language, I believe is from the Senate subdivision 5. Subdivision 6, the administrative review is based on the Senate subdivision 6, but we've clarified the language to provide that the business is entitled to obtain the hearing before the suspension or the revocation is effective. And on line 3.2, there's a typo. The word should be revocation toward the end of the line there, so we can correct that. The concept in paragraph B that a business, that the administrative hearing that the business can obtain, that the business can get that before the entity awarding the contract terminates the contract. So they'd have that contested case hearing before then. Section 7, the technical assistance was identical in both bills. Section 8, the audit language, subdivision 8, the audit language is from mostly the House language on that. It was suggested to us that we try to tighten the language up to make it a little less verbose than it was in the House language, and so we've done that. Mr. Fuller and I worked on that. So but the concept there is from the House bill. Subdivision 9, the access to data, that concept was in both bills. And Subdivision 10, the report, that the House had a one-time report. This language is a biennial report from the Senate bill. The final page, the effective date, is from the House bill. And then this amendment presumes that we would include the appropriation language when you adopted the spreadsheet, and that was the same in both bills.
Okay, is there any discussion? Representative Kreisha.
And thank you, Madam Chair. I'm looking for a practical example. Maybe, Mr. Fuller, you can help me with this. On lines 1.3 to 1.35, I have a company in my town that produces snow plows for the state of Minnesota, Little Falls Machine. And I believe they have 45 employees. Of that, most of the men employees are welders, and they have two salesmen, and there are four office staff, which are female. I'm just curious, in the mitigating factors, how would the average play out? Maybe it wouldn't be an issue for them, and if it's not, that'd be great. I'd love to go back to them and say, oh, you're good, but I just want to make sure on the mitigating factors. Would there be the average compensation? Would that be an issue for them? I'm just asking practicality. How do they average all that out? Do they take all the welders? As I said, they happen to be all men. And then they take the clerical staff, which right now are four women. Yeah, Mr. Fuller, I'm sorry.
I'm not sure that's an appropriate question to ask Mr. Fuller. I mean, you might want to ask the House author, either Ms. Moran.
I'm just looking so I can take it back.
I think a more practical comparison would be if there was female welders also in opposition to the male welders. Were they been paying the same equal pay? I don't think you can compare a welder with an office manager.
Okay.
So it's kind of like those major job categories that we're looking at.
That's right.
That could be my question.
Okay, and that's my question. So we wouldn't be comparing the welders versus the office managers under your provisions. Okay.
No, Representative Kreisha, I can hand you the EEO the form that gets filled out. It breaks it down and shows how the categories would be broken down, but no, those would not be in the same.
Okay, and that's just the reassurance I'm looking for. I mean, that would. Yeah.
So this bill is about equal pay for equal work, so it's set the same jobs.
So, Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you. So it is 1.3. Number two is the crux of the contentious part of this.
This was the compromise with Representative Moline giving up family caregiver, is that to take this language on 1.30 to 1.35.
Mm-hmm. Are you open to testimony on this?
Well,
because I, Madam Chair and Representative Moline, I don't really understand line 30, 1.30, and what exactly that means. Like I said, I am new to this, but
I think we should have the discussion. I think we can, Representative Moline can explain this provision, or Representative Moran, because we had testimony earlier on in the conference committee, so we kind of know what people's positions are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Madam Chair, I would just say, I mean, this is we've already had testimony on all this language in conference committee, so I don't know that we need to reopen that, but. I think your question is getting close to what Representative Kreisha was just asking, and perhaps he can provide you with the EEO-1 form, too, so you can see the breakdown of the categories.
Mm-hmm. And we can read the language to make sure that it's clear that we're talking apples to apples. It would have been much harder for me to agree to a provision that went beyond that, because I had told people all along that we want to make sure that
people are obeying laws that have been on the books for 50 years. And so that's the goal of this bill. The average compensation for its female employees is not consistently below the average compensation for its male employees within each of the major job categories in the EEO-1 Employee Information Report. So that's the report that you have. So it is professional to professional, technical to technical, laborer to laborer, carpenter to carpenter. That's the comparison there. And if there are differences, then there may be a reason why a woman is making less than a man. It may be the man worked there longer. Or it may be she's making more than him because she has more experience or had more education. So that's my understanding of what this language does. It wasn't in the Senate bill, and I know that it was resisted. Now, it's the last thing that we're agreeing to here, but I really felt that this is not so onerous to take, given the fact that family caregiver seemed to create a lot more problems for a lot more people.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
And to that, I still don't believe that the amendment for the family caregiver was exactly what I personally thought it was going to be. I thought it was the entire section was going to be gone, and we were not going to accept any of that section, familial status and family caregiver. So I hate to be a little obstinate about it, but
Senator Rosen, I didn't intentionally mislead you. We just discussed family caregiver, and I didn't think that familial status was an issue. So,
but Madam Chair, I do have a list of a letter that was sent from the Minnesota Employment Law Council to the House and Ways Mean Committee, and it talks about the addition of familial status and the status of a family caregiver in their concerns of the bill. So this has been, it's kind of like all in one. It was whenever we talked, some people talked about familial status, and that's how I refer to it, and other people talked about it as family caregiver. So it was, I didn't know we were going to break those up. I thought it was all encompassing, and so I am disappointed in that amendment.
So, Madam Chair, just as a reminder, that was not the only provision we gave on. We gave on nursing accommodations, we gave on pregnancy accommodations, we gave on wage disclosure. We essentially took the Senate provisions for all of those, especially when it came to remedies and enforcement, because we had certainly had more in the Minnesota Human Rights. We had wage disclosure in the Minnesota Human Rights Act. We had nursing accommodations in the Minnesota Human Rights Act. We agreed to take the Senate provisions with DALI enforcements. That was a big move for the House. In addition to that, the familial status is, I mean, the motherhood penalty in the workplace is real. Literally right now, you can, a woman with children is 50% less likely to get a promotion than a single woman. Employers are allowed to basically say, you know what, she doesn't want that promotion where she's going to have to be traveling and on the road more, even though she'd make a lot more money, because she'd rather get home at 5 p.m. and see her kids 5 days a week. That is a real problem in the workplace. There's no protection for mothers or fathers, for that matter, fathers who are the primary caretakers of their children. Their employer looks at them as opposed to a single man and says, you know, he wouldn't want that promotion because it'd be more time away from his kids. Or even asking somebody in a job interview whether or not they have kids. So, I mean, again, the familial status is extremely limited in that it only protects pregnant women and women and men with minor children. I hadn't heard a lot of opposition to that, but it is, I think, really important to add to the employment discrimination piece. Taking out the family caregiver, I think, was a huge move for the House, being that we've removed so many people from those protections now under the Minnesota Human Rights Act. That position was very important to the AARP. We've continued to see people try to bring claims for being discriminated against for their status as a family caregiver, and they have no remedies right now. And now they'll continue to have no remedies because the House has conceded to the Senate position. And then furthermore, the other Senate language that we adopted. So, you know, there was a lot that worked together here in these considerations. I wouldn't say it was just those two pieces that were working together. There was a lot of considerations that the House made in order to adopt the Senate provisions.
Members, I think we need to be a little happier here. This is the Women's Economic Security Act, and it was tough. It's a package of 9 bills that are, many of them are controversial. And I don't have everything that I wanted. Representative Moline doesn't have everything she wants. Representative Moran doesn't have everything she wants. The advocates who came in for the bill don't have everything they want. Those who express concerns, the stakeholders still have some concerns. I mean, that's kind of the legislative process, is that it's not perfect. If we made one segment happy, the other segment would be very unhappy. And that's what compromise is about. I think that we all worked hard for our positions, but in the end, we have to make a deal, and we have to compromise. And, you know, I feel like Representative Moline have done the best we can to compromise all these very diverse opinions and positions. And now we should just celebrate that we want equal pay for women, and we want women to be in the workforce, and we want them to not have to choose between family and work. And this is good. I mean, having women in the workforce has created a great state and been economic vitality for our state. And so I really want to go on the floor of the Senate and be happy about this bill and not be sad. I'm feeling like everyone is so sad. No, I drove Representative Moline out of the room. My comments. You're ready? What's on his desk? Great. Oh, fabulous. Okay, so what do we do now? We just adopt the report.
Do we move this amendment?
Oh, we didn't move this amendment. Representative Moline moves the 2536A10 amendment. Oh, that's the number of the bill. The A10 amendment.
Thank you.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay?
No.
Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. And now do we adopt a section or something? This is it. We haven't done a conference committee. Okay, now we have to, and that's a motion.
Yeah, the staff's instructed.
Okay. Representative Moline moves that the staff is instructed to construct a conference committee report based on the provisions we've adopted. Is that it? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. And are we done?
Do you want any instructions of when they're going to sign it?
Do I want any more?
Tell them those to be ready.
Oh, yes. When do we think the conference committee report will be ready for the conference to sign?
Are you going to stay tonight, or do you want to do
first thing? Well, it depends how long it takes tonight. Because John thought maybe 3 hours, but that's too long.
Maybe an hour.
An hour. You want to stay for an hour, or do you want to come back in the morning? Ask Kate. Kate, what do you want? You, of course, want us to stay for an hour. Well, you guys, we're taking it up tomorrow.
You can't take it up tomorrow anyway.
12 hours.
12 hours.
12 hours. So are you going to take it up at 10:30?
It's more than an hour.
Okay. They'll say an hour and it'll be 2.
That's just in the morning.
All right. Okay. So I'll look for you all in the morning. They'll bring me the conference committee report.
Take it around, Ronnie, by then.
Yeah. Okay. I think so. Why should we?
Well, you should just...
Okay, so we'll round robin the conference committee report tomorrow, unless we want to meet and do it. Round robin it? Okay. Okay, the conference committee is adjourned.